Hi, this is Haley Palumbo. I'm the host of Unknown America on WGXC 90.7 ACRA. This week is going to be similar to last week in that I'm going to play for you two past episodes of the podcast version of Unknown America, just on the account of having a house guest who's staying a bit longer than anticipated. So the episodes that I'm going to be playing for you today, the first one is about the world's largest truck stop in Iowa. It's a personal account of my visit there and a bit of history about the place and why I'm interested in it and what I like about it. And then the second episode is about Brother Stare, who's a bit lesser known of a figure. He is a shortwave radio-based preacher who passed away with a very strange and complicated history. One thing I want to mention is, for whatever reason, when I was recording these, I thought it would be a great idea to put a like an old-timey radio filter on my voice. This is not going to be normal. Next episode, it'll go back to normal and the effects won't be there. So if it's a little hard to hear, I apologize. So I hope you enjoy the episodes, and I will see you next week. Bye.
Hello, I'm Haley Palumbo, and this is Unknown America, a show about people, places, and events in American history that often fall under the radar. This week, we'll be covering the world's largest truck stop in Walcott, Iowa. I'm not sure what drew me to Iowa, but I found myself on a month-long break from work, wanting to go somewhere I'd never been, so I chose a direction and started driving. I loved it there. It was painfully ordinary until you looked hard enough. I saw strapped to a tow truck a school bus gutted by fire, its black shell coated in a thick layer of residue of smoke, the same dog at three different rest areas, and a very small town called Toledo, not to be confused with Toledo, Ohio, off the side of the highway. I stayed in a motel in Toledo. I wandered through the parking lot and sat in front of a closed Chinese restaurant and in the morning saw two cats that looked identically and even moved identically. I didn't want to go home, but eventually I had to. I hope to one day go back, maybe permanently. The first place I stopped my car in Iowa is the world's largest truck stop. I didn't know it existed before I saw it, which is strange for me, as I'm generally quite privy to anything declared the world's largest, no matter what it is. I'm always wondering if there's some sort of legal proceeding that goes along with declaring something to be the world's largest. The world's largest truck stop is an Iowan institution. The land was purchased by Bill Moon in 1964 in an attempt to find a perfect place for a truck stop run by Standard Oil, a company that Moon was regional manager for. The stop was, at first, a small white enamel building that housed a restaurant, a small store, and a lube bay. The initial intentions were never to build something large. Now, contained within it is a dentist, a movie theater, a laundromat, a food court, a barber shop, a chiropractor, a convenience store, a dog groomer, a gift shop, a library, showers, and a gym. It receives 5,000 visitors every day and rests on the stretch of highway that connects New York to San Francisco, I-80. It is adjacent to the Mississippi River. Upon arrival, I'm struck by the sheer size of the place. It is positively enormous, certainly the size of the shopping mall I frequented as a child, if not even larger. I have a fleeting thought of wandering the mall with a crisp $20 bill in my hand given to me by my father, and here I am 18 years later in its facsimile, with a modest but part disposable income which I'm about to spend on a leather cowboy hat, a sword, and a woven keychain that says wildlife. There's no real way to predict what exactly is going to happen in life, but I'm certain I didn't anticipate anything even remotely close to this when I was a 13-year-old getting my ears pierced at Fox Valley Mall with my late mother. But I digress. The truck stop is massive. There's a map hung up on the wall covered in plastic. I want to view every part of it, so I head up two flights of stairs. The way it is laid out is sort of like a small town, but indoors. There's a floor that in a way resembles laminate cobblestone, and storefronts where the businesses are with small signs advertising what they are. It has a strange feeling about it. I remember when I was a kid there was an exhibit at a museum near me, the Museum of Science and Industry, that was essentially a two-scale town built inside of the museum that included storefronts, streetlights, a cobblestone road, all housed within the museum. This place was similar to that. It was a simulation of a small town housed in a larger facility. That is the best way I can explain it. Above a doorway to the right of the entrance, there is a sign above the stairs that says showers, theater, barber, public laundromat, and dentist. I make my way up the stairs and start to look around. The signs advertising some of the services there are being hung off of rods in the old-fashioned way signs are hung in small towns, which makes everything easy to locate. I decide to make my way through the top floor. I made my first visit, the dentist. His clinic is very small, unassuming, a glass door with a red neon tooth inside of it. I was not quite sure what to do, so I rapped on the door slowly twice, and he appeared in a few seconds. He has gray hair, wire-rimmed glasses, and a small smile. He asks how he can help me, and I ask if he can talk to me for a few minutes. Since he did not currently have a patient, he took me up on my offer, but expressed that it really can only be a few minutes, as he needs to be available if any walk-in patients arrive. It was a casual conversation, brief. He is seated at a desk and his chair turned towards me, hands crossed in his lap. He was kind, patient, and seemed very dedicated to his work. He told me he's had his job for decades. And in a few interviews he's given with local newspapers, he claims that he has absolutely no interest in opening a private practice, as he enjoys helping truck drivers too much. He said something along the lines of that he gets satisfaction knowing he's helping truck drivers be able to continue to do their work comfortably and without issue. He told me a few interesting things before ushering me out for an incoming walk-in. That truck drivers often need teeth pulled in the same place in their mouth due to high erosion from chewing tobacco. That their teeth often experience a great deal of decay from drinking a high amount of coffee and sugary drinks in an attempt to stay awake during long trips. And that due to a rather extreme life on the road without much time to schedule appointments with a non-emergency dentist, there are greater levels of dental-related deaths, such as untreated tooth abscesses spreading to the brain, than the general population. He tells me he has a patient coming in who's been waiting in the library, so I say goodbye and head out. The patient is actually waiting outside the door. He looks at me and says, "Was just trying to eat, can't," and prods the side of his cheek with his index finger and laughs a bit. He passes by me, enters the office, and presumably takes a seat. I hope the dentist can fix him up. A few doorways past the dentist is what is marked as a movie theater. I poke my head into the movie theater and there are 10 to 15 men sitting quietly and watching Ratatouille. One of them is on their phone, and the rest are sitting and watching the screen in the dark. A couple of them have cans of root beer or Coke that appear to be complimentary from a small refrigerator. The room doesn't look like a typical movie theater. The seats are not raised, but in rows in front of a relatively large television screen. It has more of a feel of a waiting room than a movie theater, but it still seems comfortable and a good place to relax after a day or two of driving. I wanted to ask somebody who chose the films, but there was nobody around to ask. just outside of the doors of the movie theater's laundromat. There are about 12 washing machines and a handful of men doing their laundry and folding clothes and chatting. I catch bits of one conversation. Three men are talking about what they're going to eat for dinner. One of them plans on eating dinner in his car, as his daughter cooked for him yesterday evening. And the other two say they'll likely go to Wendy's. But actually, one of them has a microwave in the cab of his truck and has leftovers from the night before, so he thinks he'll eat that. The other men are quiet and seem to be focusing on getting their laundry done. As I imagine, they don't have a lot of time to spare, so they're working at a decent speed. I have no idea what to say to these gentlemen and feel I'd be intruding, so I let them be. What is advertised as a convenience store takes up most of the building, but it's significantly more than that. Attached to it is a gigantic food court. The convenience store sells an absurd array of things. Every single thing one with a CB radio would need to begin their hobby or maintain it. Hundreds of novelty keychains and license plates. Flags for many American causes and occupations. Knives and swords and scopes for guns. Cowboy hats and boots. Ceramic elephants and frogs, moccasins, leather jackets, patches and pins, steering wheel covers, winter socks, water shoes, steel-toed boots, whips, daggers. That is a fraction of what they sell there. It's just about impossible for me to quantify. I leave with an amount of items that one might consider idiotic. A little ceramic Bigfoot with a motivational poem sits in a small Ziploc bag in my purse. And a pin that declares, "I amaze myself," is attached promptly to my jean jacket and remains there to this day. I had only been driving for a few hours, but I decided to get the full experience. I needed to take a shower. The facilities were very clean and highly organized. I paid $14 and was assigned a number. When your number appears on the screen in the waiting area, it's listed with another number, the number of your shower room. I'm assigned room 12, which is one of those pieces of information that I will, for some reason or another, retain until I die. Number 5, room 12. No one seems concerned with anything else. They are there to shower, not to chit-chat. The impersonal feeling of the experience makes it more appealing. I'm there to complete a task and nothing more. I walk down a hall until I see my shower. It is a room with a thick door and a lock. Inside, there are two large white towels hanging from a rack on the wall, a large mirror, a counter, and a sink. The shower has two pumps, one for a 2-in-1 hair soap product, and the other for body wash. The water gets hot quick. It is a very refreshing shower and feels sort of exciting in the way driving to the airport early in the morning feels exciting. You're doing something that is in aid of getting somewhere else, and there's something about that that sends electricity, a very mild electricity, throughout my body, especially since I did not know where I was going to go next. The whole truck stop is this way for me. Despite the services there being fairly commonplace, washing your clothes, getting a coffee and a meal, there is something about doing them that makes me feel excited. I am in a hub with hundreds of people, together but separate, getting ready to go somewhere else. It's a transient space, but a transient space developed with a great deal of care in mind, well thought out and well designed. It might not be home for the truckers, but it is close an approximation of it as can be attained in a commercially zoned building on the side of the highway adjacent to the Mississippi River. I end my visit. It is now 3 a.m. with a small breakfast. I sit with my new sword and my vaguely damp hair from the shower and drink the coffee from a small paper cup. It is good. Bright, zippy, and just a touch weak. I drink 3 cups and chew my pancakes and sausage links slowly. I look past the rack of novelty license plates and mannequins and ghillie suits out to the parking lot. It's dark and there are a few people milling around. People say there's no place I would rather be. I echo that sentiment halfway on this very early morning. There's no place I would rather be but wherever I'm going to go next. This has been Unknown America. Thank you for listening, and good night.
Have you forgotten, rich man? Well, then let me remind you. Let me call to your remembrance. In your lifetime, you had good things. You lived in a nice apartment. We had nice things. Are you listening to me? Can you imagine how that must have come back from Abraham's lips to that poor rich man down there? There he was. Oh, man, I'm tormented in these flames. Have mercy, God said I'll mock you.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Haley Palumbo, and this is Unknown America, a show about figures and events and places and little pockets of time unique to America that often fall under the radar. Today's episode will be about notorious shortwave radio figure and preacher, Brother Stair. In 1978, a man named Ralph Gordon Stair, or for our purposes, Brother Stair, bought a motel on a hot day in Walterboro, South Carolina, after a literal crisis of faith. Following a short stint as a Methodist minister in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, he walked away from organized religion because he had other ideas. He claims that he came to a realization that Methodism would not protect the people from an apocalypse he believed to be certain. What is more likely than anything is that he wanted control over a group of people, and he wanted to make money. We often call the subsequent maneuver starting a cult. Stair ventured south, a place he believed was the safest place for Christians in the end time, and started a commune in dense woods, with the aforementioned motel serving as the nucleus, surrounded by either mobile homes or houses shoddily hand-built by his followers. His followers were instructed to take a vow of poverty and donate everything they had to Stair's church that he named the Overcomer Ministry. As of 2021, there are about 70 of them. The women grow their hair long and secure them into buns on their head. They wear dresses that touch the ground. The men wear collared shirts and long pants. Stair rejects Easter and he rejects Christmas, forbidding celebration of both. He rejects modern technology, except for internet and the radio, of course. That being said, given the remote nature of the compound, Stair drew them to him via a handful of channels, but primarily one, the radio. Mentioning Brother Stair to most shortwave radio hobbyists, even the most casual, will elicit laughter, groans, irritation, or some combination of the three. You see, Brother Stair doesn't limit his sermons to a typical 1 hour a week, or even 1 hour a day. Stair broadcasts from free-to-air satellites like Galaxy 19, Hotbird 8, Optus D2, and Ticom 5. He broadcasts on 6 international shortwave radio stations, WHRI, WWRB, WTWW, WWCR, WBCQ, and WRMI. This flings his message across the planet to countries and continents far outside the United States, South America, Africa, India, Russia, Australia, Europe, Israel, and more. He broadcasts from a solar-powered studio at his motel headquarters in the middle of the woods for hours at a time, every day. If his obsessive broadcasts have netted him any followers in other countries, that remains to be seen, but I reckon it's likely.
I'm gonna pay him. He said, you let them slap you on your cheek. That's gonna give me a right to slap them on the cheek. He said, don't you know my slap is bigger than theirs? He said, you let them kick you when you're down. He said, then when they're down, I'm gonna kick them. I talked about that at the table tonight. Boy, can you think of the justice of God when he looked down to Abraham and saw the rich man down there? Hey, Father Abraham! Father Abraham! Send Lazarus! Send Lazarus to dip his finger in water and come and cool my tongue!
Abraham!
Hey, Sid! Hey, you remember?
While his prolific output would be ultimately forgivable, yet quite irritating if it were someone of a more benign nature, especially being that he was, and is, a tremendous source of income for shortwave radio stations, often enabling them to stay on the air simply by purchasing airtime, Brother Stair exists on the more maniacal fringe of the Christian faith. He claims to have prophesied 9/11. He claims to have prophesied Hurricane Katrina. Not in dull tones. His sermons, sometimes 4 or 5 hours long, consist of racism, primal shrieks, and incredible hatred of all other Christian ministers, which he openly and frequently proclaims, rejection of modern medicine, speaking in tongues, sometimes in a room alone with just a microphone for company, sometimes in a room full of his followers, and of course, every New World Order conspiracy theory that you could fathom. Often, since he purchases so many slots, you can hear multiple broadcasts from Stair at the exact same time, just by flipping around to different stations. It is infrequent that a person this baffling and hateful isn't followed by a slew of horrible problems. In 2002, Stair was arrested, and in 2004, he pled guilty to misdemeanor assault and battery. Roughly 80 days later, he returned to his commune without a word and began broadcasting again as if nothing had occurred. In 2007, his former followers had filed suits against him, and he was forced to pay damages of $700,000. Things functioned normally for a while, but then on December 18th of 2017, Stair was arrested at his compound for sexual assault, kidnapping, burglary, and sexual contact with a minor following an extensive FBI probe. His excuse, of course, was to tell all of his victims that the acts he committed were all God's will. 10 days after the arrest, this message was posted on the Overcomer Ministries website. Attention, Overcomer listeners. Due to legal difficulties, as of January 1st, 2018, the Overcomer Ministry will not be broadcasting on AM, FM radio, and shortwave. The Overcomer broadcast will continue on satellite, telephone, and this website stream. 3 weeks later, Stair was released on a $750,000 bond. The funds were, to my knowledge, produced in a casual and effortless manner by a colleague. I cannot figure out how he procured them. After this, he returned to radio without a word, where he has remained ever since. He, as mentioned previously, gives his sermons in a little studio in front of a microphone, or in a chapel surrounded by followers. If you navigate to Overcomer Ministries' website and view the photos uploaded, you will see a group of people that, for all intents and purposes, look fulfilled. In some photos, people are working in a field harvesting the crops for meals they will eat. In others, people, nearly all elderly, are sitting in a mess hall around long tables, smiling into a camera or looking off into the distance. Given the positive, if a little strange, nature of these photos, one can assume they are carefully curated. As if you search for Brother Stair through other channels, you will see his bedraggled mugshot, a website created by an incensed shortwave hobbyist dedicated to painfully meticulous dissection of all of his sermons, photos of FBI swarming his compound, stills of him screaming sermons into a microphone locked in a red-faced holler. Those sermons are shot from his microphone into space, reflected from satellites like Hotbird 8 and Galaxy 19 back into homes in Missouri, India, China, Russia, and the Philippines. Nothing can keep him from his mission, not prison, not prosecution, and perhaps not even death. He is 87 years old, but his followers will likely keep him on the air via pre-recorded sermons for as long as they live. or until all that mysterious money runs out. If you have a deeply morbid curiosity and would like to listen to his sermons, you can hear them live on his website at overcomerministry.org. You can also hear them by subscribing to a service that texts you a different telephone number every single day at which to hear Stare live. If you'd like to attend a service at Overcomer Ministries and see the man in the flesh before he dies, they're held weekly at 12680 Augusta Highway, Walterboro, South Carolina, 29488, around 10 a.m. If you'd like a ride there from Chicago, let me know. From here to there are a lot of long roads and trees and hills and bridges, but I like long drives. I don't mind. I'm curious. But I suggest wearing a disguise. You wouldn't want them knowing who you were. Thank you for listening to Unknown America. Haley Palumbo, signing off.
So you eat the cockroaches. And of course, he couldn't barbecue them, you know. They weren't barbecued cockroaches, brother. And there was a little old sister sitting here with us. Her name was Consuela, a good old friend of ours. She said, I could never do that. And I looked at her and I said, suppose eating a cockroach would mean life or death for your daughter. Suppose you stand somewhere and a guy had a gun to your daughter's head and said, if you don't eat that cockroach, I'm going to blow your daughter's head off. Would you eat the cockroach? Oh, yeah. Do it for your daughter, but you won't do it for Jesus.
You liked those. They were fun to listen to again. I really enjoyed making them, especially the one on Brother Stare, because I got to listen to a whole lot of shortwave radio to try to find his broadcasts. This month, I'm doing two episodes about the state of Georgia. So I'm doing the Music of Athens, Georgia, and Howard Finster, an extremely prolific religious outsider artist. And next week will be all about CB radio, which I know isn't necessarily unknown, but I'm going to tell some personal stories about it. As a heads up, I posted most of the Unknown America scripts on my website, haleypalumbo.com, so if you know anyone who's hard of hearing, they can read the episodes as opposed to listen. Thank you.